This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, back with another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime stories, as we do every Wednesday. We'll start off this week with The Crime Club, their episode from August 28, 1947, titled Death Swims at Midnight. After that, it's This Is Your FBI and The Jolly Widow, their episode from August 22, 1952.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Death Swims at Midnight. Yes, we have that story for you. Come right over. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The manuscript is on this shelf. Here it is. Death Swims at Midnight. The very exciting story of a singular beach where the tide goes out and murder comes in. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. Bill Desmond, the famous private detective, and his pint-sized assistant, Maxie Davis, have gone to the resort town of Marbelle for a rest. To Maxie's disgust, Bill has dragged him out of bed at 7 a.m. to go for a swim. As they stand at the edge of the boardwalk, looking out over the ocean, Maxie blinks his sleepy eyes and then turns to glare at his boss.
You mean you expect me to go in there?
Why, sure, Maxie. A swim before breakfast is good for the health.
For a fish, yeah. Me, I should have stood in bed.
Oh, you'll change your mind when you hit that water. Aye, look at how blue it is. How calm.
Mm-hmm. And who knows how cold.
I do, gentlemen.
What?
I do. Yep, the water's cold. Cold as death.
Excuse me, but...
Kind of scared you, eh? Well, didn't mean to. Name's Atkins. Fuzzy Atkins, they call me. I live in that shack on the old fishing pier.
I see.
Weren't thinking of doing some fishing, were you?
I know. Not this morning.
Too bad. Ain't many goes fishing these days. Nope. They got other things to do.
Well, yes. Excuse us, Fuzzy. We are going for a swim.
Go right ahead. But don't forget, the water's cold these days. Very cold.
Encouraging little fellow, isn't he, Maxie?
Yeah, look, Bill, maybe he's right. The water does look kind of chilly. Let's go back to our hotel.
Oh, nonsense. We're going for a swim. Come on.
Okay.
Here, we'll get down these stairs to the beach.
Uh-huh. I still don't see why we couldn't have come down here later. At least we would have had company.
We have company, Maxie.
Where?
Over there. That girl.
Oh.
Ah. She looks rather interesting, doesn't she?
She looks like a dame.
There are dames, Maxie, and dames.
Yeah, and there's trouble and more trouble. Come on, Bill, let's head for the other end of the beach.
And pass that up? Not me. Come on, let's visit.
But, Bill, that... Oh, okay. Say, what's she doing? Digging in the sand?
I don't know. She looks rather old to be making mud pies. Hello.
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry if I startled you. Well, how's the water this morning?
It's okay, I guess.
Nice beach you have here.
It's getting kind of crowded.
Is it? I didn't notice.
That's funny. Those eyes of yours have been noticing everything else.
Well, there's nothing like exercise for the eyes, I always say.
Just be careful they don't get too much. I hear that makes them turn black.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Just to give them a rest, I'm going to get out of here. So long.
That's the neatest brush off you ever got.
Too bad, too. I've always wanted to teach a girl like that how to swim.
Something tells me she don't need no lessons.
Maybe not. Well... Let's get into the water, eh?
It's kind of nice here on the sand, Bill. What do you say we squat here for a while?
Yeah, all right.
Watch where you sit down, Maxie.
Huh?
There's quite a bit of tar on the beach.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's a nice spot. Guess I'll just... Hey!
What's the matter, Maxie?
What's the matter? What's the idea of putting your foot under me?
Put my foot under you? Not me.
Oh, cut it out, will you, Bill? Who do you think you're kidding?
But on the level, I swear I didn't.
Well, that's funny. Wait a minute. Maybe there's something... Hey! It wasn't your foot. It's someone else's.
What? Here, let me see. Maxie, there's someone under the sand. Quick, help me shovel it to one side.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know just where, but if the feet are down here, I think... Ah. Here we are.
Holy smoke! It's a dame. Is she sleeping?
Yes. The long, long sleep of death. Did you phone the coroner, Maxie?
Yeah, Bill, he'll be right down.
Good.
Say, Bill, have you figured out what caused the death?
Well, there's a nasty bruise on her head, but I'd say she drowned.
Drowned? But how did she get under the sand?
The how, Maxie, is not so important as the why.
Howdy. Howdy, gentlemen. Noticed you digging from up on the pier. Ain't after clams, are you?
Not exactly, Fuzzy. Here, take a look at what we dug up.
Oh. You know, I ain't seen a clam like that for a long time. No, sirree. Not like that.
Yeah, come on, let's stop that.
Huh?
Who is this girl?
Appears to me like Mrs. Dale. Joan Dale. Yep, that's who it is. She's got the big bungalow right opposite my shack on the pier.
I see. Fuzzy, did you see that girl who was on the beach when we got here?
Yep, sure did. That was Carol Carson. Got the bungalow on t'other side of Mrs. Dale. She left you in a hurry, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
Hey, you don't think that Carson
dame
was...
I don't think anything yet, Maxie. Fuzzy, we expect the coroner here any minute. Will you watch the body until he arrives?
Yep, sure will.
Good. Come on, Maxie. I want to have a look at Mrs. Dale's bungalow.
Hey, this is quite a layout, huh, Bill?
Yes, Maxie. It's quite cozy.
Cozy is right. With a joint like this, even I could learn how to like the beach. What are you looking for?
I don't know. We'll just poke around, see what we can. Ah.
What is it?
This desk, Maxie.
Well, what about it? I don't see a thing.
Take a look at the blotter.
So I'm looking. All I see is a lot of numbers.
Exactly. It's almost as though someone has been practicing arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there are no papers on the desk. None in the drawers and... Yeah, let me see. No. Nothing in the waste paper basket either. Maybe...
Where are you going?
Over the fireplace. Uh-huh.
You find anything, Bill?
Yes. Ashes, Maxie. Ashes. But not only of paper, of cloth, too.
Cloth?
Uh-huh. And to judge by some of the burnt threads, a coarse cloth.
Hello? That you, Martin? I want to talk to you about... Well, who are you?
My name is Desmond, Bill Desmond. This is my assistant, Maxie Davis.
Oh, you're the ones who discovered the body, aren't you?
Yes. How'd you know?
I've just left the coroner.
Oh, I see.
I beg your pardon, but the name Desmond is rather familiar.
Familiar, he says. Brother, you're looking at the best private op in the business.
Oh, of course. Oh, permit me to introduce myself. I'm Fulton Stokes, Mrs. Dale's attorney.
Oh, yes. How do you do? Mr. Stokes, when you left the coroner, had he completed his examination of the body?
Yes. He's of the opinion that Mrs. Dale drowned at some time around midnight last night. He thinks it was an accident.
Oh?
You disagree?
Well, I don't know. Yet. Tell me, who is this Martin you called to when you first came in?
Martin Dale, Joan's husband.
Do you know where he is?
Probably on his cruiser, which is anchored just offshore.
Didn't he live here with his wife?
Well, no. You see, they'd had a bad quarrel. Joan had the idea that Martin married her for her money.
I see. Do you know when they last saw each other?
Not exactly, but she did have an appointment to see him on board his cruiser late last night.
Late last night, eh? Maxie.
Yeah?
I think we'll take a little boat ride.
Dale's cruiser. Get on board and I'll follow.
Okay. Up you go. Okay, I'm on.
Now give me a hand.
That's it.
Thanks.
Hey, what do you two think you're doing? Get off or I'll throw you out.
Sure. Come on, Bill.
No, Max, you don't mind Mr. Dale. He's just kidding.
Kidding, huh? Okay, wise guy. You ask for it, I'll just... Gee, he didn't last long, did he?
No, Maxie. The trouble with him is he's big, but he's soft. Aren't you, Dale? Come on, now, come on, up on your feet.
What do you want?
I've got some bad news, Dale. Your wife is dead.
Dead?
Yes. She was drowned late last night. Tell me, when did you see her last?
A couple of days ago.
You're lying, Dale.
Lying? Why, I ought to...
What?
Nothing.
That's better. Your wife was aboard this boat late last night, wasn't she?
Yes, I talked to her about a reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't in the mood. She'd lost a lot of money gambling with Nick Vero.
Nick Vero? Well, who's he?
Well, he runs the Pelican Club at the end of the boardwalk.
Oh. Well, go on.
I tried to convince my wife to let me come back. She wouldn't listen.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to kiss her, and she struggled, then jumped off the boat and swam for shore. That's all I know.
That's all, eh? She had an ugly bruise on her head, Dale.
I don't know anything about it.
Maybe not. By the way, where can I get in touch with Nick Vero?
Well, from 8 p.m. on, you can find him at his club. Before that, he's usually with his girlfriend, Carol Carson.
Carol Carson?
Carson?
Why, yes, do you know her?
Yeah, you might say she was a passing acquaintance, huh, Bill?
Uh-huh. You know, Maxie, I think I'll pay her a visit this evening. Maybe we can get to be warm friends.
Nice view from the boardwalk, huh, Stokes?
Hmm? Oh, Martin. What's wrong with your jaw?
I had a visitor on my boat. A man by the name of Desmond. Kind of funny his knowing that Joan had an appointment with me last night.
Well, now, wait a minute, Martin. Joan's death occurred under peculiar circumstances. Desmond asked me some questions, and I answered them.
Uh-huh. I got a couple of questions, too.
Yes?
As far as I know, the will Joan made after our marriage has never been changed. Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Now, according to the terms of that will, I inherit her estate.
Go on.
I'm a little short right now. I've been running into some bad luck at Nick Vero's. How about an advance? Well?
How much do you need?
$5,000.
Well, I guess I can let you have it.
Good.
Just one thing, Martin.
Yeah?
If Joan was murdered, you'd be the leading suspect.
So?
Now, I'm not saying that you're guilty. But if you were tried and convicted, you wouldn't inherit a penny. I'd be out $5,000.
Why, I'm surprised you for bringing that up. After all, you'd only be out $5,000. As for me, I'd be out.
Hello?
Hello, Nick?
Yeah?
This is Martin Dale.
Oh, I've been waiting for you to get in touch. Got that dough you owe me?
Well, I've got $5,000, Nick.
$5,000? Told me you'd have it all by tonight.
I know, but now that Joan's dead, I'll need a little more time.
Sorry, Dale, your time's up tonight. Either you pay off or else they'll shovel you in with your wife.
But if you'll only wait, I'll...
No, I've waited long enough.
Now, look, Nick, give me a break and I'll tell you something you should know. Okay?
I'm not making any promises, Dale, but spill it.
Well, there's a private detective from here from New York, a fellow by the name of Bill Desmond.
That's not news.
I know, but he was out on my boat this morning, and from what he said, I think he's got something on Carol.
Huh?
He said that he was going to see her this evening.
Oh.
Well, Nick, do I get more time?
Okay, Dale. If this tip turns out to be on the level, you can forget about tonight's deadline.
Getting kind of late, Nick. Aren't you going up the clock?
What's the matter, Carol? You anxious to get rid of me?
Of course not. Hey, what's wrong with you tonight?
Nothing. Why?
Well, you've been thoughtful all evening.
So? I've been thoughtful.
You're not usually when you're with me.
So?
I was just wondering if you were thinking of Joan Dale.
Why should I be thinking of her?
Oh, come on, Nick. You don't have to be cagey with me.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I saw you go into her bungalow last night.
You know, you're way off base, baby.
Now, look, Nick, I'm sort of mixed up in this thing, too, and I figured that...
You expecting anyone, Carol?
No.
Okay, give me a minute to duck into the bedroom and then go see who it is.
Right. Just a minute.
Good evening.
Oh, the boy with the athletic eyes.
Yes, Desmond's the name. Bill to you.
Well, good night, Bill.
Just a moment, Carol. Don't close the door till I'm inside. There we are.
You get out of here.
Oh, not yet, darling. Nice place you've got here. You know, I'm beginning to think that your friend Nick Vera's a fool.
What do you mean?
Well, a setup like this, a girl like you, I'd be hanged if I desert you every night just for business.
If you don't mind, let's leave Nick out of this.
Suits me. As a matter of fact, I picked my time in coming to visit you to be sure I'd avoid running into him.
I see.
I figured we'd be more comfortable alone.
What do you want?
Don't. I didn't do anything.
I know, but I didn't like the way your hands were twitching.
Oh, that. That's nothing. I guess I smoke too much.
Yes, I guess you do. Suppose you cool off and tell me why you came here.
Okay. Tell me, why did you bury Joan Dale's body in the sand?
I didn't.
Did it have anything to do with Nick Vero?
Well,
don't stare like that. Talk, I said...
You shouldn't have hit him so hard, Nick.
Shut up.
But you shouldn't have hit him that way.
I said shut up.
That's the first time you ever hit me.
Yeah. It won't be the last time if you don't shut your trap. Help me tie this lug up. I'm gonna feed him to the fishes.
Yep, what is it?
I've been looking high and low for my boss, Bill Desmond. Have you seen him?
Nope, ain't seen hiding a hair of him. Maybe he's gallivanting.
Wait a minute, Fuzzy. I thought I heard something.
What? I didn't hear nothing.
There it is again.
Hey, you're right. Someone's crying for help. Sounds like it comes from under my pier. Come on.
Okay.
This way, under the boardwalk.
Help.
Sounds like it comes from right over there. Wait. I put on my flashlight. There we are.
Holy Hannah! It's Bill!
Yep, so it is. Crushed up like a bundle of wash. And the tide coming in, too.
How?
It's okay now, Bill.
Maxie?
Yeah, and Fuzzy Atkins.
I'll have you loosen. Just a second, Mr. Desmond. Just have to cut one more cord.
There we are. Can you get up, Bill?
Yes, I think so. Just give me your hand for a moment. Thanks.
Gee, I'm sure glad you're okay, Bill. Lucky Fuzzy and me heard you. Otherwise, you'd have been a goner.
Yep. The old devil in the sea might have gotten another one.
The old devil, Fuzzy?
Yes, sure. Didn't believe in him much till I saw him get Mrs. Dale.
You saw a devil get Mrs. Dale?
Yep, sure did. I was up in my shack and I saw...
Bill, you okay?
Yes, Maxie. But Fuzzy's been hit.
Is he hurt bad?
He's dead, Maxie.
Dead. Who do you think killed him?
A devil, Maxie. A devil.
Boy, what a layout this Pelican Club has. Look at all the suckers just begging to be taken to the cleaners.
Yeah.
Did you see Nick, Bill?
No, Maxie. Let's try his private office.
Right. Here it is.
Mm-hmm. Better stand guard outside the door, Maxie. I don't want to be disturbed.
Okay.
Say, who do you think... Bill Desmond.
Yes, Carol, what's the matter? You act as though you're looking at a ghost. Keep both hands on top of the table, darling.
Well, you got me wrong, Bill. I wasn't going to pull a gun.
Maybe not. But suppose you come around here, away from the desk.
Okay.
That's better. I suppose it must have handed you quite a laugh when Nick crept up behind me and let me have it.
I didn't laugh, Bill.
No? After he threw me under the pier, you might at least have gotten in touch with Maxie.
No, I couldn't. Nick made me stick close to him till just a little while ago. As soon as he left, I called your hotel, but Maxie was out.
Mm-hmm. You're fast on your feet, aren't you?
You don't believe me?
What do I look like, little boy Blue?
It's the truth, Bill, honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, never mind that now. Where'd Nick go?
I don't know.
Now, look, Carol. I've got a bump on my head the size of an egg. My wrists and ankles are raw from the ropes cutting into them. I'm in no mood for stalling around.
I'm afraid. Nick will kill me.
Well, now, don't worry. I won't tell him how I found out. Well?
He went to see Stokes at his hotel, the Shore Plaza.
Honest?
Yes.
Okay, sweetheart, I'll buy it. For your sake, I hope this isn't another sellout.
You really expect to find Nick here, Bill?
I don't know, Maxie.
You don't know? Well, I do. I'll bet you that...
Yes? Oh, it's you, Desmond, and Mr. Davis.
Oh, yes, Stokes. Tell me, is Nick Vera with you?
Nick? Why, no.
I told you, Bill. I knew she was lying.
Quiet, Maxie.
Okay.
Do you mind if we come in for a few minutes, Stokes?
Well, I'm sorry, Desmond, but I'm rather busy.
Sorry, too. I want in.
Now that you're in, what do you want?
Well, Nick Vera. Shame on you. A big boy like you hiding behind the door. No wonder Stokes was so nervous. That gun of yours is almost as ugly looking as you.
Close your big gap, Desmond, or I'll fill your teeth with lead. Until this half-pint sidekick of yours to close that door.
Do as he says, Maxie.
Sure.
That's better. Now, what did you want, Desmond?
Oh, I want to talk to you about a number of things. For instance, why you cocked me earlier this evening and left me under the pier for fish bait.
Me? You're nuts.
Oh, I don't think so, Nick. Tell me, did you really want me to end up like Mrs. Dale?
Look, Desmond, if you think I killed Mrs. Dale, you're off your trolley.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Carol Carson thought you might have had something to do with it. That's why she buried the body in the sand.
Carol acts like a dumb little twist sometimes. For instance, she shouldn't have told you I was here.
She didn't.
Maybe not. Well, Desmond, anything else you'd like to ask me before I go?
No, Nick. But if I think of something, I'll call on you.
Yeah, do that. I'll give you a warm reception. Okay, you guys, just stay where you are. I'm leaving.
Shouldn't we follow him, Bill?
No, Maxie. That put play right into his hands. Stokes.
Yes, Desmond?
What did Nick want with you?
Well, he came to see me about Mrs. Dale's gambling debt. It seems that she owed him about $50,000.
As much as that, eh?
That's what he says. Now that she's dead and he can't collect it legally, he wanted me to pay it out of her estate.
What did you tell him?
Well, naturally, I told him that that was impossible. He didn't like that.
I guess not.
He told me I'd have to pay up or else he'd kill me.
What's the matter with you, Bill? Ever since we returned to our rooms, you've been pacing up and down like a starbug. I thought you said you were going to undress and hit the hay.
Yes, I know, Maxie, but I can't get this case out of my mind. The solution keeps eluding me.
It does? Well, I think it's a cinch.
Oh, you do, eh?
Sure, look. Mrs. Dale probably drowned swimming in from her husband's boat.
How about Fuzzy Atkins?
Well, Nick was sore because Fuzzy helped pull you out of the water.
Ah, no, Maxie, that won't wash.
But who else could have killed him? That old devil in the sea he was babbling about?
That old devil in the sea. Wait. Maybe Fuzzy wasn't babbling.
Huh?
Yes. It could tie in with those ashes we found in Mrs. Dale's fireplace. Why, of course.
Of course what?
Maybe. Oh, see who it is, Maxie.
Okay.
Bill in, Maxie.
Oh, Miss Carson.
Who's that? Carol?
Yes, Bill. I've got to talk to you.
Good Lord, what's happened? You look as though you've been through a meat grinder.
Nick gave me a beating.
Why, the dirty...
He was sore because I told you he'd gone to Stokes. Well, I'm going to give him lots more to be sore about.
Yes?
Nick was in Joan Dale's bungalow last night. I don't know if he saw her, but he took some of her papers.
How do you know?
I saw her name on the envelope just before he put them in his desk.
I see. Come on, Maxie. I want to take a peek into that desk.
are you making out, Bill?
I think we'll be in Nick's office presently, Maxie. Unless I've lost all my skill with a skeleton key. There. That does it. Now, careful, Maxie, when you close the door.
Okay.
Now, the flashlight. That's it. Uh-huh. There's the desk. Hold the light on the top center drawer.
Right.
That's it. This should be easy to force in the door. I'll just insert this near the lock and press down. That did it. Now to see what...
Hey, someone put the lights on.
Yeah, I did. Oh, you looking for something, Desmond?
Well, if it isn't our gentle friend, Nick, and his friend, the automatic.
Yeah, this gun and me are good pals. It always does what I want. Desmond, I told you I'd give you a warm reception. Well, here it is.
That, Mr. Stokes, is what I call an entrance. Thanks.
Not at all, Desmond. Glad to be of service.
How is Nick, Maxie?
I think he's going to make some undertaker very happy.
Well, I don't think anyone will miss him. Now, let's see what's in that desk drawer. Ah, yes. There's Mrs. Dale's papers, all right.
May I have them, Desmond? As her executive, I'll need them to wind up her estate.
Certainly. By the way, may I have that gun? I'll turn it into the coroner, explain what happened.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Thanks. Now, would you mind taking off your shoes and socks?
What?
What's the matter with you, Bill? You're nuts?
No, Maxie. I just want to prove that Mr. Stokes is guilty of murder. Hey, what time is it, Maxie?
7 a.m. Hey, what's the idea of setting the alarm clock?
I've got a date at the beach with Carol Carson. Where the devil are my swim trunks?
Wait a minute. I didn't get a chance to talk to you last night. Why did Stokes commit those murders?
Well, he'd embezzled a good deal of Mrs. Dale's money. She'd been checking her accounts and discovered the discrepancies. That's why her desk blotter was full of figures.
Oh, but how did he drown her in the ocean?
He didn't. That is, in the ocean. He drowned her in her bathtub after first knocking her unconscious.
Uh-huh.
Then he carried her under the boardwalk and the old fishing pier.
I see. So Stokes was really the old devil of the sea that Fuzzy saw.
Exactly. Now, where in blazes are those swim trunks?
But how about Nick?
Oh, Nick. Well, when he was in Mrs. Dale's bungalow, he came across her papers with notations on Stokes' embezzlement. Then he went after Stokes, not for Mrs. Dale's gambling debt, but for blackmail.
Oh, I get it. Now, one thing more, Bill. Why did you want Stokes to take off his shoes and socks?
Well, if you remember, the beach was covered with spots of tar. When Stokes carried Mrs. Dale into the pier in the dark, he got tar all over his feet and legs. And that stuff is almost impossible to get off.
Oh.
When he got back to her bungalow, he tried cleaning it off with a towel. Then he burned the towel in the fireplace.
I see.
Now, if you'll excuse me, Maxie, I'll be off to meet Carol.
Bill.
Now what?
Before you go, don't you think you ought to put on your swim trunks?
And so closes tonight's story, Death Swims at Midnight. James Erthine wrote the radio script. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Arthur Vinton played the part of Bill Desmond. Murray Forbes was Maxie Davis. Elspeth Eric was Carol Carson.
Ralph Camargo was...
the Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented transcribed as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Do you and your wife worry about what will happen tomorrow instead of getting the most out of life today? There is one way to take the uncertainty out of tomorrow, and that is to plan for it. If you have the right plans, much of your worry is over. Now, there is a man who knows how to help you plan for the future. He is your local Equitable Society representative. In about 13 minutes, I want to tell you more about this helpful, friendly neighbor of yours, your local representative of the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. Tonight, the subject of our FBI file, homicide. Its title, The Jolly Widow.
Law-abiding citizens become shocked when they learn of the existence of an almost unbelievable organization whose business is murder. Murder skillfully performed by experts at reasonable prices. Law enforcement has met this menace in the past and will continue to vigorously fight it. The lawlessness and gangsterism which produce gunmen for hire have not suffered total defeat. In this country today, as is shown by tonight's case from the official FBI files, there still exists a class of professional killers. Men who will cold-bloodedly shoot down a fellow human being they have never laid eyes on before. Their charge for so doing is, of course, higher than a decade ago. But it is still not regarded as exorbitant by those who patronize its services. Tonight's FBI file opens in a smartly furnished studio apartment in one of the better residential districts of a large western city. The young lady who lives in the apartment is just entering.
Molly?
Yeah, Carl.
Did you go to the lawyers?
Of course. I told you I would.
Yeah, what's the story?
They want to have the marriage annulled.
For how much?
$10,000.
Not enough.
Carl, that ain't bad.
What do you think you're playing, Jax?
Well, it's better than
the Seward family is loaded. If they want to have your marriage to their pride and joy annulled, they've got to up that figure. Plenty.
But, Carl, don't forget we did frame the guy into marrying
That's
him.
Not true.
Oh, stop. We got him so drunk he'd have married you if you'd asked him.
Very funny.
Look, what do I tell the lawyer?
About the money?
Yeah.
Tell him it's not acceptable.
He said that was their final offer.
Forget what he said. I've got other ideas. Where's your husband now?
On a hunting trip.
Where?
At his camp.
Have you ever been there?
Yeah, why?
You know the way up there well enough to direct somebody to the place?
Sure. Look, what is this?
We're not going to take the $10,000. And we're not going to have your marriage to Mr. Seward annulled.
We're not?
No. I know how you can get all of Mr. Seward's money.
How?
It's very simple. Instead of being his wife, become his widow. Answer the door, will you, Molly?
Okay. Just a minute.
Hello?
Oh.
Is Carl Jackson here?
Are you Lester Colby?
That's right.
Come in, please.
Well, hello there, Les.
Hiya, Carl.
Oh, this is Miss Corning, Mr. Colby.
How do you do?
Hello.
Well, long time, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you look fine, Les. Fine.
Carl, let's get down to business, huh?
Oh, sure, sure. I've got a job for you.
I can use one.
Horse has been running bad?
They've been running fine, but too slow.
Can I make you fellas a drink?
Oh, swell. Scotch and soda for me, honey.
I'll have the same.
Okay.
What's your deal, Carl?
I've got a client. I can't tell you his name. He wants to have a certain party disposed of.
For how much?
$1,000 in cash.
Where'd you come up with that kind of a client?
Bless. I don't ask you anything about your business, do I?
Sorry. Where is this guy?
He's up in a hunting lodge about 30 miles from here. Miss Corning has drawn a map for you with all the directions.
Okay. When do you want the job done?
As soon as possible.
Tomorrow?
Fine. Oh, and one thing.
Yeah?
It should appear to be an accident. A hunting accident.
Huh. It will.
Swell. Now, here's the guy's picture, Les. Don't make any mistakes.
I never have.
Here's your drinks, boys.
Oh, thank you, dear.
Mr. Colby.
Thanks.
I have a toast.
To what?
To Les and a successful mission.
The following evening at the local FBI field office, a sergeant of the state police is just introducing himself to Special Agent Jim Taylor.
Mr. Taylor, I'm Sergeant Welch.
Oh, hello there, Sergeant.
Your agent in charge sent me in to see you.
Fine. Well, sit down, won't you?
Oh, thanks.
What's on your mind, Sergeant?
My regular patrol includes a pretty remote section of mountain country about 30 miles north of here.
Yeah.
There was a hunter found dead up there this morning. He'd been shot through the head.
You identify him?
Yes. His name was Walter Seward. He comes from a well-to-do family here in town.
Mm-hmm. Was this a hunting accident?
I don't think so.
Oh, why not?
Well, there were several factors in the case that make me seem to think he was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, examination showed that Seward was killed with a .38 caliber bullet.
Oh?
Now, I've never heard of anyone going hunting with a .38.
No, not unless they're hunting people. Well, what are the factors, Eddie?
We found a car abandoned not too far from the scene of the crime. It had Oregon plates on it. Our office wired to see if it had been stolen.
Did you find any trace of the weapon?
No.
How about footprints?
Well, it's pretty dry country this time of year.
Well, Sergeant, what would you like the FBI to do?
I'd like some help on these. That's a shell I found near the body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bullet the coroner removed from Seward.
All right, I'll have them sent on to our laboratory in Washington, and I'll get a check against the National Unidentified Ammunition File, too.
Well, what's that?
Well, that's a file of guns and ammunition found at the scenes of unsolved crimes. Now, they'll check the markings on this particular bullet with other .38 slugs that they have on file, see if the same gun was used in any other crime.
Hmm. How long do you think it'll be before you get a report?
Well, I'm afraid that depends on how busy they are. However, I'll be in touch with you just as soon as I hear from them. Yeah, Millie.
Any word from Les?
No.
You think he'd call or something?
He doesn't have to.
Why not?
He did his job. Very successfully, too.
How do you know?
I just read the morning papers. They all carried an account of a very tragic hunting accident.
To Seward?
Of course.
Was he killed?
Naturally.
That's wonderful.
They gave the story quite a play. One of them even had an editorial, warning all of its readers to be more careful when they go hunting.
No kidding. Hey, maybe we did some good with this.
Well, darling, that was the whole idea, to help the community.
What happens now?
I think you should go see Seward's lawyer.
Okay.
On your way, stop off at the bank.
What for?
Draw out $900. I want to give it to Les.
You promised him $1,000.
Well, I'm holding out 10% for my commission.
How can you charge a commission?
I was very careful to tell him the job was for a client of mine.
Oh, look, how cheap can you get?
Darling, this is merely good business.
Okay. What do I say to the lawyer?
Just tell him you'd like him to make all the necessary arrangements for you to collect your husband's estate.
Carl, I wonder how much it'll be.
I'd say at least $250,000.
No kidding. Gee, being a widow is wonderful.
Busy, Mr. Taylor?
No, come on in, Sergeant.
Thanks. I just got your message a little while ago. Have you heard from Washington?
Yeah, I received a report on that bullet. It's in this file here. Here it is. The bullet used to kill Walter Seward matched two others in the unidentified ammunition file.
Two others?
That's right. In October of 1946, there was a petty racketeer killed back east with the same gun. And in June of this year, the same gun was used to murder a bookmaker.
Hmm. Almost sounds like the owner is a professional.
Sure does. There's one thing that puzzles me, though.
What's that?
Well, the other two known murders that were committed with this gun were killings that involved other criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you told me that Walter Seward was from a well-to-do family. So how does he fit in?
I don't know. We've checked on Seward, but he was never in anything that wasn't legitimate.
But if we're correct in assuming that he was killed by a hired gunman, Sergeant, he had to be mixed up in something.
That's true.
Well, I think the first thing to do then is go and talk to Seward's family. See if he had any enemies.
Right.
Good to be back here. So hot downtown.
Was it hot in the lawyer's office?
No, his place is air-conditioned.
That's not what I meant.
Huh?
I mean, how did you make out with him?
Oh, I don't think he likes me very much.
Really? Why not?
I was so charming. Nothing happened.
You mean he didn't go for the widow routine?
Oh, yeah. He admitted I was a legitimate widow.
Did you ask about the estate?
Yeah.
How much?
Over $300,000.
Oh, that must be less. Let him in.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Colby. Come in.
Thanks.
Well, hello there, Les.
Hello, Carl.
Well, allow me to congratulate you. That was a fine job you did.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, I suppose you've come here about your fee.
That's right.
Millie?
Yes, dear?
Did you bring back that cash?
Yeah, I have it right here.
And Miss Corning cashed my client's check. As you know, he requested secrecy.
I know.
Here's the money.
Thanks. Well, here you are, Les. You're $1,000 less 10% commission for me, making $900 net.
Okay.
Guess that closes the books, huh?
Not quite.
What do you mean?
Well, let's review a few of the facts.
Well?
When you first talked to me about the job, I thought I was going to knock off some stale nobody.
So?
So I pick up the papers and find I've worked on a guy named Walter Seward who's worth a bundle.
Well, what's your point, Les?
I'm getting to that. I also find out that Miss Corning here is Mrs. Walter Seward.
Who told you that?
It's in the afternoon papers.
Oh.
Les, what difference does that make to you?
I can figure as good as you can. She comes into a chunk of dough now as a widow.
That's right.
And you're going to get a piece of that dough for seeing to it that she became a widow.
I still don't see why it matters to you.
Carl, I did the dirty work on this job, and according to the papers, you two figure to split about $300,000. Where's the whiskey?
Why?
Well, you two were nice enough to drink a toast to my success when I left for the mountains. Let's drink another toast to our new partnership.
Return in just a moment to tonight's exciting case from the official files of your FBI. Right now, I want to talk about your case, your problem. Perhaps the experience of Mr. Walter Wilson, one of the 6 million members of the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States, may help you. Mr. Wilson, I wonder if you'll tell me what your problem was before you joined the Equitable Society.
My wife and I bought a home, but we wanted to own it free and clear before we were too old to enjoy it.
Yes, millions have that same problem, Mr. Wilson. Now, could you tell us what did solve your problem for you?
We were listening to this program one evening, and we heard you describe a way to tear up our mortgage years ahead of time.
That's the Equitable Assured Home Ownership Plan, the AHO plan.
That's it. So next day, I phoned our local Equitable representative, and he dropped around that evening. He showed me how the plan provided a low-cost first mortgage with life insurance protection. He showed me how my wife would own the home free and clear without any further payments if something happened to me. Believe me, if all Equitable men are as helpful as the man I talked to, you've got a fine organization.
You can count on Equitable representatives to be friendly and helpful. They see your problem from your point of view. They help you get the most from your life insurance dollar. You see, Equitable men are experts, specialists in insurance, and they're backed up at the home office by a staff of trained technicians, actuaries, and economists. So please remember, no matter what your insurance problem may be, there is an answer. And your friendly neighbor, your local Equitable representative, knows the answer. Why not get acquainted with him? There's no obligation. Consult your local telephone directory for your local representative of the Equitable Society. You'll be glad you did.
That's EQUITABLE.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. Now back to tonight's FBI file, The Jolly Widow.
Of all modern inventions, the one which has probably been of greatest benefit to the underworld is the automobile. Getting away in a fast car, a criminal can be many miles from the scene of the crime a few minutes after its commission. But while science sometimes gives aid and comfort to gangsters, it has also developed scores of new and improved methods of crime detection, all of which are constantly employed by your FBI. Tracing a bullet by means of minute markings on it to the gun from which it was fired has led to the conviction of scores of gunmen. In tonight's case, we see the FBI's National Unidentified Ammunition File make an important contribution to the solution of a particularly vicious murder. Tonight's file continues in the FBI field office. Sergeant Welch of the State Police is just approaching Special Agent Jim Taylor's desk.
Hello, Sergeant.
Hello, Jim. Did you contact Seward's family?
I talked to his lawyer. He said he didn't know any enemies Seward might have had who would want him murdered.
I see.
He did tell me something that might help us, though.
What was that?
Well, he discussed young Seward's secret marriage.
Yeah.
It seems the marriage was the result of a frame-up, or so the lawyer said.
Why didn't they have it annulled?
Well, the Seward family hates publicity, and they were in the process of dickering with a girl to get her to agree to an annulment.
What was her reaction to that?
According to the lawyer, she seemed about to accept their offer of $10,000 when the murder occurred.
I see. She gets the whole estate now, I guess.
Yeah, that's the size of it. Oh, and she's already been in to see him about it.
Wouldn't say she was exactly in deep mourning then.
No.
Who is she? Or who was she before she married Seward?
A nightclub singer. Uh-huh. She met Seward in one of the places where she was working. According to his lawyer, she got him quite drunk one night, drove him to a justice of the peace outside the city and married him.
Mm-hmm. Did you find out where we can locate her?
Yeah, she lives in an apartment hotel. I checked over there before I came back to the office. She'd left word at the desk that she wouldn't be back for an hour.
Can I use your phone, Jim?
Surely.
I want to report on this to my office.
Okay, I'll go over and talk to the widow and we'll meet back here.
Billy, any word from the lawyer?
No, but while you were out, I had a visitor.
Les?
No, this was a man named Taylor from the FBI.
What'd he want?
Well, he asked a million questions about Walter. When we got married, how, who was there.
What else?
He wanted to know if I ever heard Walter talk about any of his enemies.
Why'd he ask you that?
Well, he said that they knew that Walter was murdered. It wasn't a hunting accident.
That's not so good.
What do you think went wrong?
Well, how do I know? I'm not working with the police.
I just thought you might have an idea.
Look, don't make me such a big man. You were a full partner when things were good. Have you heard from Les?
Not a word. He said he'd get in touch with us when his money ran out.
He must have had a couple of winners at the track.
I hope he stays lucky. Maybe he won't bother us then.
Well, that's wishful thinking, honey. He'll be back whether he goes broke or not.
Carl, suppose he gets picked up by the cops. He might decide to talk.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be so good for us.
Wait. I just thought of something that might cover everything.
What?
Do you got any stationery in your desk?
Sure.
I want you to write a letter.
To who?
To the FBI. Now get some stationery and write what I tell you.
sorry to have kept you waiting, Sergeant. I was in talking to the agent in charge about this case.
Oh, that's all right, Jim. Did you get to see Mrs. Seward?
Yes, I did.
Get anything from her?
Well, that's what I was in talking to the agent in charge about.
About what she told you?
No. No, she didn't tell me a thing I didn't know before I went over to see her.
I don't understand, Jim.
Well, after I interviewed her, I came back here to the office.
Uh-huh.
And about an hour later, I got this note from her.
What does it say?
Well, when I was talking to her, I asked her whether or not she knew of any enemy that Seward might have had who would go so far as to kill him.
And she said no.
That's correct. Now, in this note here, she says that she used to go with a hoodlum named Lester Colby before she married Walter Seward.
And she thinks that Colby may have killed Seward?
Yeah. She says that Colby was insanely jealous of anyone she even spoke to, and that in some way he found out about her secret marriage to Seward.
Well, who was Colby?
We checked up on him. Got a very bad record. Fortunately for us, he's wanted by the FBI for unlawful flight to avoid prosecution.
You gonna pick him up?
Yeah. Having a warrant drawn up now for his arrest. And another one so that we can search his apartment. Mrs. Seward included his address in the note.
When do you want to go over there?
What time is it now?
About 3:15.
Well, those warrants ought to be ready by now. Let's pick him up and get going.
Seward, this is one of your partners.
What do you want, Mr. Colby?
Well, it's a long story. I went up to a bookmaker a little while ago, and I bet on 3 horses that were sure things.
How does that concern me?
They lost.
That's too bad.
Well, it's worse than that. I lost 1,000 more than I've got.
You shouldn't gamble.
Look, I didn't call you for any lesson.
What did you call for?
Well, I want another 1,000. Today, I got to pay that bookmaker.
Can he wait?
Well, it's not his business. He plays for cash. Now, I don't care how you do it, but dig me up 1,000 by 6:00.
Where am I going to get $1,000?
Call Seward's lawyer. He'll go for it.
I can't call him.
Look, I just told you. I don't care where you get it.
Are you calling me from your apartment?
No, I'm at the bookmaker's now.
Are you going home from there?
No. I'm going to stay here until after the last race, and then I'm coming over to your place. I'll be there at 6:00. Be sure you're home. And be sure you have that dough.
That you, Jim?
Yeah. I got the key.
Good.
Show the superintendent the search warrant. Handed them right over.
Let's go in.
All right. Does it? Oh, go ahead, Sergeant.
Thanks.
Yeah. Wow. I got one break anyway. Well, I got one room to search.
Yeah.
Let's take a look through this dresser, huh?
Okay.
Let's see. Shirts. Socks. Hey. This might be what we're looking for.
What is it?
A 38.
That's what was used in Seward.
Yeah, I know. Hey, Sergeant. Take a look at this firing pin.
Off-center, huh?
Uh-huh. You remember the peculiar markings on that shell that you found near Seward's body?
Uh-huh.
Well, this could easily be the gun that was used. Well, we send it along to the laboratory and let them check. They can tell us for sure. Take a look at this one here.
Give me the gun, Jim. I'll wrap it up.
Oh, okay. There you are.
Thanks. Anything in there?
No.
Try this. Mr. Colby doesn't have many possessions.
No. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Something under these. Hey, Sergeant, look here.
What is it?
It's a hand-drawn map, and there are directions written here on it.
Hey, let me see that, Jim.
Yeah.
Well, that's the territory where Seward was shot.
Oh?
This ties Colby into it, all right.
Yeah. It does more than that, Sergeant. Let's get back to the office.
Where have you been?
What's the matter?
I got a phone call from my partner.
Les?
Who else?
Where was he?
With a bookmaker.
Did he say if he was going home?
No. He's coming over here.
Well, then your note to the FBI won't work.
I know.
Did he say why he was coming here?
I'll give you one guess.
Money?
Naturally.
When did he say he'd be here?
At 6:00.
Well, it's 6 now.
I called the FBI a few minutes ago and told them Les would be here.
When did Les call?
2 hours ago.
Well, why didn't you call the FBI then?
I was too upset. I didn't think. Carl, if he gets here before the FBI does, what'll we do?
I'll handle that.
Do you think we should call it?
Answer it.
Okay.
Hello.
Come in, Les.
Thanks. Well, all partners present, huh?
That's right.
I won't waste much of your time. Did you dig me that money?
Well, it's not here yet.
Would you call the lawyer?
Yes, she did. He's sending it over.
Oh, okay.
Well, that must be the messenger now. Let him in, Millie.
Yeah, sure.
Hello, Mrs. Seward.
Oh, come in.
Thank you. I received your message.
That man there is Les Colby.
Huh? What is this?
Stay where you are, Colby. I have a gun.
Who are you?
I'm a special agent of the FBI. I've got a warrant here for your arrest for the murder of Walter
I'm
Seward.
I'm so glad you got here before he made any trouble.
I'm grateful to you, too, Mrs. Seward. Hadn't been for you, we might never have known about Colby.
Why, you double...
We also might never have found the map that you drew for Colby to get to your husband's hunting lodge.
Huh?
I found that in his room. The written directions on it match the handwriting in the note that you sent me at the office.
Well,
there must be some mistake.
Well, I'll give all of you a chance to correct it. I'm taking you in now for questioning.
Lester Colby was convicted in a state court for murder and sentenced to be executed. Carl Jackson was convicted as an accomplice to murder and sentenced to be executed. Mildred Corning, his female companion, was also convicted as an accomplice to murder and given life imprisonment. And thus, three more criminals saw their careers ended because of thorough investigative work by a special agent of your FBI. And the important thing about the arrests was that they removed from circulation a professional killer, a man who made his living by murder. His conviction also closed the files on a number of unsolved murders, thanks to the unidentified ammunition file, a little-known but very important section of the laboratory of your FBI.
Would you like to make sure your children get a good education? Would you like to retire in peace and comfort when you're 60? Would you like to own your own home free and clear? You can, and you don't have to be rich to do it. Your local Equitable Society representative, without any obligation to you, will be glad to show you how almost anyone with an average income can make his dreams of a secure future come true. Get acquainted with this helpful, friendly neighbor today. Consult your local telephone directory for the name of your local representative of the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States.
Next week, we will dramatize another case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Its subject, larceny. Its title, The Big Frame.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of places or persons, living or dead, is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. Others in the cast were Georgia Ellis, Bill Johnstone, Lynn Stallmaster, and John Stephenson. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. And inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling transcribed story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Big Frame on This Is Your FBI.
Listen for This Is Your FBI next week at this same time. This is ABC Radio Network.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. If you want to hear more from Crime Club, This Is Your FBI, more crime, horror, thrillers, comedies, all kinds of stuff. It's all available at relicradio.com. You'll find past episodes there. Links to everything else Relic Radio and a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. That's how this is all made possible. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.